Get ready for all the craziness of small business. It's exactly that craziness that makes it exciting and totally unbelievable. Small Business Radio is now on the air with your host, Barry Moltz.
Well, thanks for joining this week's radio show. Remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now incredibly show number 515. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the all-in-one communications platform. Well, as an angel investor back in the early 2000s, I got a lot of pitches creating games to bring them to the retail market. Very few actually have been successful as a game called Cards Against Humanity. If you've never played this game or heard of it, it's kind of like that game Apples to Apples after you've had a few drinks. Here in the studio to join me is Jen Bain. She was employee number one at Cards Against Humanity. She's now the community director. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So give us an idea of, well, first of all, I'm a huge fan of this game. We've had hundreds of hours of laughs thanks to your team.
Thank you.
So I got to start out saying thank you very much because you've brought so much joy into our family.
That is awesome to hear. Thank you very much.
So how did you get the idea for this game?
Yeah. So the game was originally created by eight friends who grew up in Highland Park, suburb of Chicago. And they, they were kind of like this nerdy group. They called themselves the Nerd Herd, kind of stuck. And they were, they liked to create games, participate in, they formed like a comedy club that no one else joined. So they were just like a group of tight friends and they were throwing around this idea. And they've made many games together over the years, but this is the one that actually stuck. This is the one that they enjoyed working on the most.
So it's interesting. They made many games over the years. What were some of the other games that they tried that really weren't successful in the marketplace?
Oh, too stupid to even name. Like, never even made it out of, like, their own meetings. Like, it was just, like, stuff they were always throwing back and forth. You know, like, inside jokes as friends. And this is the inside joke that Cards Against Humanity is the inside joke that got wildly out of control.
It's interesting. For all those people that have tried different business ideas and they fail, this is like all the other stories where they tried a bunch of different things and finally they got to the point where this was the game that was successful.
Yeah, and they would be the first to tell you that they had no intention of making this a business or
wow.
a company. Yeah, it was totally by accident. Like, created the game for fun, put it on Kickstarter in 2009, 2010.
Right.
Asked for $4,000 in funding and received $15,000 around there,
wow.
which was by far the most money any of them had ever touched.
Exactly.
But Kickstarter was new then, and so was Cards Against Humanity. So we look back really fondly on Kickstarter still to this day as like the reason for the season. Thank
right.
you, Kickstarter.
Exactly. And so the original name of the game was not Cards Against Humanity. What was it?
It was Cardenfreud.
Right, it's a play on the word Schadenfreude, which happens to be one of my favorite words of all time.
It's a wonderful word.
I love that word. And my understanding is that the word means is that you actually, I guess the word pleasure, you take pleasure in watching the suffering of other people. Is that?
Yeah. It's kind of like when you see someone you don't like experience something awkward. Like when you see, if you were to see Donald Trump fall down some stairs, you'd be like, it's kind of funny.
Or maybe a more mundane example is that's why there are gaper's delays, right? When you go in traffic.
Yeah.
Or that's why.
That's probably a better example.
Well, that's why reality TV shows are really popular, right? It kind of takes people out of their, what they might see as their ordinary life, and it allows them to get distracted for somebody else who's going through something totally different.
Great word, terrible title.
Exactly. That'd be a terrible title for the game. So you go through Kickstarter, and what does the first iteration of the game look like? Is it these black and white cards still?
Oh, yeah. I don't think the brand will ever change from this black and white Helvetica. The design you know it right now is, in my mind, iconic, and it totally heightens the absurdity of what's written on the cards because it is written so sterile, so corporate. The black and white could not be more plain. It could be a sign for a doctor's office or for an accounting firm, and yet you're reading these in ridiculous phrases, and it really the contrast is what makes it iconic.
Right, it's like black and white.
Exactly.
And that's the fun of how people match these. So describe for a few people out there, if you haven't played this game, describe how the game is played.
Yeah, it's a really simple party game. You get a hand of cards and a judge every round will read a black card and you try to answer with your funniest white card.
And the black card is usually a fill in the blank or a question?
That's right. Yep. Fill in the blank or question.
All right. So I have at this point, I have to go through a couple of examples, right, with some of my favorite cards. So for example, the black card might be, what do old people smell like, right? And then people who are playing, they have the white cards, which are the answers.
Yes, right, that's correct.
And so one of my favorite answers to this one, and one of my favorite white card, is bucket, right? And I think you can just visualize that, right?
I got to tell you, that's one of my least favorite cards in the whole game.
All right, well, one of my favorite cards again, and this the black card is, that's how I want to die. And the fill in the blank here is, this is my favorite, firing a rifle into the air while balls deep in a squealing hog. Jen, that is my favorite of all time.
You know, I'm surprised you're so drawn to the, like, really explosive wild ones, because in my mind, the game really shines for all the cards that are so simple. Like, my favorite card is agriculture.
Just says agriculture.
Yeah.
That's it. And what makes it funny is whatever the question of the fill in the blank is.
Yeah, or a new card that we released recently. This just kills me, and I can't explain why. I think it's because working at cards, your brain kind of gets warped. But my favorite card is fresh dill from the patio. So delightful.
It's great. And so what are the inspiration for, how do the different cards get developed? Because you have a lot of different packs, so people never get bored playing the game over and over again. How do these get developed at cards?
Yeah. So I think people would be surprised to know that comedy writing, at least comedy writing for this game, is pretty difficult. It's kind of labor intensive. You have to do a lot of work with grammar, with finagling, because you want the card you're writing has to match with as many other combinations as possible. And we have like over 1,500 cards written, published by now. So it's a lot of work to make a card work with all the other cards. We do have a writer's room now. In the last two, I think it's been 2 years now, we've developed a writer's room full of amazing Chicago writers, comedians, improv people, and they get together and do the heavy lifting of writing ideas that we never ever would have come up with before. They're extremely creative and totally took the game to a whole new absurd level.
So Jen, what they do is they write the black cards and the white cards, and then you test them how they work together. How does the process
go? That's exactly right. So put ideas in a document, just a good old-fashioned Google Doc. Do some culling, pull out cards that we don't like, that we do some rewriting, and then we playtest extensively. Every week we do a playtest with new people, new demographics, because you never really know how the card is going to play until you see it in the hands of someone else.
And what surprised you the most of something, perhaps a new card that actually played really well? You said, God, I can't believe that worked.
Oh, man. We have some new cards in a new product called the Absurd Box.
Right.
And without giving too much away, I will say this is the weirdest product we've ever made. We've certainly done some weird stunts over the years, but in terms of like products we've released, like this one is bizarre. I think it'll be really fun for people that have been playing the game for years, because they have never seen any writing like this from us before.
Well, let's talk about some of the weird, as you call them, stunts, right?
Yeah.
That you've done, because I look forward to the holiday time, because I always want to know, what is Cards going to do this year for the holidays, right? And you've done all sorts of crazy things. I always send in my money just to see what I can get. I think for $10 or something, you get some crazy thing. And I've got to own part of an island. I've showed you before we went on the air. I actually got my own Cards Against Humanity card, which was fantastic. It says Barry Moles is the answer on it. And I was telling Jen before we went on air, I actually slipped it into the answer pack while we were playing a game. And one of my sons actually got it. And he totally freaked out and was totally impressed, Jen. And that made me go up a whole step
that
I had my
cool.
own card.
That is very cool that you slipped it in and made it a surprise.
So Cards has never really shied away from controversy. First of all, you have all these add-on packs. And during the 2016 very controversial election, a lot of people decided to stay away from it, but you guys stepped right into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. One of them is our own politics. We don't pretend to be anything except a liberal company. We've never been dishonest about that. I also think some businesses and companies are scared to step into politics because they feel like they're going to alienate like half of their audience. And maybe that's true. It certainly could be. But what you're really doing, at least for Cards Against Humanity, is you're really getting the people on your side very empowered, excited to participate. I think if you want to have a strong brand has to stand for something, which kind of means standing against something else. And we have no problem doing that.
No, I love that, because I've been reading a book called Fantasyland. It talks about how truth just hasn't been questioned over the last 2 years. It's been questioned for a long time. And I always thought that when the internet came around, that we'd say, oh, this is great. Now we can actually go, we'll look up on the internet and see exactly what the truth is. Unfortunately, everybody can find their own truth. So what I've been working on now the last year is not necessarily to convince other people that don't agree with my side of how I view the world, to have them say, well, you know, you're wrong, I'm right, let me convince you, but to really try to activate the people that already agree with you. And it seems that that's what Cards is doing.
Right, right. I mean, we try to empower people to take action in their own lives, too. And then, you know, we don't try to bite off more than we can chew. We are still a comedy party game. We're not going to be more powerful than the government.
Not yet.
Maybe.
Not yet.
We'll see. Thanks for your vote of confidence.
Not yet. Well, so talk about some of the stunts you did in the political arena, because I think it's really interesting. So you had a Clinton card pack and you had a Trump card pack, right?
We did, yeah. So it was the summer right before the election, and we released a stunt called Cards Against Humanity, or America Votes with Cards Against Humanity, and we released two expansion packs, one all about cards about Hillary Clinton, and then the other expansion pack, Cards About Trump. And if you look at the website treatment of this, and you can still go to it, America Votes is still, it's America Votes with Cards Against Humanity.com is still live. The website treatment makes it look as though we're treating both sides equally. Like there's a side on the page for Hillary, side of the page for Trump, and then you scroll down. Then you start to read our copywriting. And it's, we said, totally straight and totally honest, we said, you get to vote with us. If you buy the Hillary pack, we'll donate all that money to Hillary. If you buy the Trump pack, we'll still donate that money to Hillary. Like, why pretend otherwise?
Right. And so you also, again, I remember you also had something about a job opening for a CEO or something.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah, that was really
fun.
See,
I'm a real fan, so I follow all this stuff.
I know. I had no idea. I was speaking with the world's biggest Cards Against Humanity fan.
I think it's so creative. Talk about that.
Thank you. I'd love to. So right around the time, I believe it was the time of the inauguration. The timeline's a little fuzzy, but it was when Obama was leaving office. We decided to take out an ad in the New York Times, and we also posted the ad on Craigslist, you know, which famously you can get pretty some interesting jobs right on Craigslist. And we decided to finally, in all our years, we've never had a CEO. We had an idea. We could use a CEO, and we had someone specific in mind, and it's someone that has years of foreign policy experience, years of making something called Obamacare, someone who likes to eat 8 almonds every night. Oh, you know what? Maybe this will reach Obama. And I got to tell you, we still get people that don't know it's a joke. We still get resumes from people that are applying to this fake job.
And so when you interviewed President Obama, how'd that go?
Oh, that's my dream.
That's your dream.
Yeah.
That's
I would dream. Open with that story if that ever happened.
Absolutely. Well, you've never shied away from controversy, even in the cards, right? And some of the cards, some of the white cards, and I'll just read some of these, the blood of Christ, right? Or another answer card is seeing things from Hitler's perspective, or the mixing of the races, Nazis, right? Or there was another one about ethnic cleansing.
You know, when you read all these out loud, you make us sound really terrible. But like all comedians, we try to comment on problems in the world, sexism, racism, without being that ourselves. And the context is very important here. You should always play the black cards
exactly.
with the white cards.
Exactly. Well, I'm not sure sometimes it makes it any better, because you play the black card with blood of Christ. It's like blood of Christ, good to the last drop. But I think what I like about this is it actually calls out the issues that are going on. Things that we all know on, like wars were done for ethnic cleansing, right? Or the Holocaust, there are still deniers out there. So let's call that out. Right. And I think by doing it in a humorous manner, Jen, it makes it accessible to a lot of people.
Yeah. There's this famous quote from, I forget who the comedian who said this. Anyway, he said, when you make someone laugh, you're also teaching them something. Like you're opening something in their brain and letting something new in. And I really believe that.
And that's one of the most eye-opening things for me. I've been to a lot of the protests in Chicago, and one of the reasons that I go is I see all the protest signs, because I love the signs. I post them on social media. And one of my favorite signs, it was an anti-Trump sign. It says, and he doesn't even have a dog. Right?
I know. Right? That is a huge warning red flag
right,
to me.
Exactly. And guess what? He doesn't have a sense of humor. And I think that, as you said, it's very important, because I believe if we don't laugh in this world, we end up crying.
Oh, I totally agree. We have to be able to laugh at the absurd things in our world as we're trying to fix them. Man, that thing about the dog, though, there's a lot of disturbing things about Trump, and that is certainly
one of them.
The dog
thing, absolutely. I want to go back to the business side a little bit, Jen, because Cards has one of the most unique distribution strategy has ever seen. First of all, you not only sell the product on Amazon, where a few other things are available for sale, but you also give the product away for free. Someone actually can download it and make their own cards. Tell us about the thought behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. So since the beginning of Cards Against Humanity, since the Kickstarter, since the beginning of time, we have always given the main game of Cards Against Humanity away for free on our website. You can download the PDF and print it out yourself. If you use a printer like Kinko's or something, I think it'll cost like $5 or something, but you can also do it on your home printer and just cut it out. And there are a couple reasons for that. The first is, in my opinion, even if you don't have $25 to spare and you want to play a game with your friends, I think you should be able to do that. And the second reason, the more business strategy reason, is the best advertisement for us really is word of mouth. Like, if you play the game with your friends and make them laugh, they're going to want to get in on that. Like, it's playing the game is what gets people excited to play the game again. And then probably eventually get bored, and then we'll all need new jobs. But for now, people are still excited to play it.
But if you play the main game, then there's always this add-on business, right, where you can buy the packs and things like that. So that helps as well.
Yeah, that's true. I would say the main game, though, is still our biggest. It's still the OG. It's still the reason why I have healthcare today.
So when I first went to purchase the game, Jen, it wasn't available. There was a shortage. And I thought, God, this is really smart. They actually put in shortages so they might people want it more. Was that an intentional strategy?
Absolutely not. It could not have been less intentional. It was a mixture of stupidity and us being new and not knowing and being surprised by how many people wanted the game. And, you know, we still have this debate today when we're, like, waxing poetic on the early days of Cards Against Humanity. We still think, like, did that help us? Like, it seems like you're an example of someone who was like, oh, now I'll just buy it again. But people were really mad at us that they couldn't get the game. So I think it probably hurt us and it probably helped us. And the thing is, there's no way to know.
Right. I mean, but for me, I always look at things from a marketing strategy standpoint.
Yep.
And I'm saying to myself, oh, that's brilliant. That is just brilliant. And then, of course, I went on eBay and I bought it from somebody at a much higher price because I had to have it for a certain get together for the family.
Right, right. So, well, you could have just downloaded it for free.
Well,
you know?
I'm not a do it yourself kind of guy.
Got it.
You know,
got
so
it.
I'm Jewish. I'm not a do it yourself kind of guy. I don't, you know, I can't put things together with my hands. So I'd much rather buy it.
I understand.
So and I like how the card's done. How has cards really changed? You've been there from the very beginning. How has it changed from 2010 to now 8 years later?
Yeah, that's a great question, something I think about a lot. You know, in 2010, this game was just like a rocket ship that we were all just like holding on to. And that's actually why I was brought in, because there's too many fans, too many people to interact with. Like, guys were spread thin trying to like keep up with the amount of work. And since then, I was employee one. And since then, we've reached about 20, 25 full-time employees. We have a writer's room. We have a customer service team. We have someone who goes to events for us, like gaming conventions. So it's changed a lot in that we're now able to do a lot more. Like, the reason why we're able to do these larger-than-life stunts is because we now have a team.
And it's my understanding is it's all privately funded. There's no angel or VCs or anything like that?
No, never. Never taken any money, never taken on any debt.
And so this is also what's really interesting from a business standpoint about cards is that there actually were 8 founders. And you don't find many successful businesses actually had 8 founders.
Yeah, and they would be the first to tell you that this works for us. It might not work for you. But I can say that the thing that Cards Against Humanity has that is so valuable and irreplaceable is our independence. Like, no one is telling us, no, you can't take on Trump. No, you can't write this joke. Like, it's all us. And we do play tests and we consult people we trust. But in the end, it's like it's our business.
You also mentioned that there's never been a CEO. So how does, from a business standpoint, how does the company operate?
Yeah, I mean, unless Obama wants to come in for real.
It's still open.
It's open.
All right.
Yeah, we're open to one particular CEO.
And we're still hoping he listens to this show every week. So go ahead.
That'd be awesome. I hope he's listening to this. Yeah, I mean, you know, there is no CEO. Like, everyone takes on different roles and different strengths. Like, Max Temkin, my boss, is politically minded, and he's been working in, he actually worked on Obama in 08, so he's got some like political chops, which is why we're able to dive into local politics even. We're also a design-led company. A few of the owners of cards are designers by trade, which is why some of our websites are just incredible, because we have, you know, yeah, we have a great design team now as well. Yeah, so like we don't have a CEO, and I don't see a missing piece really. We do have an adult in the room. That's what we call him. His name is Nick, and I want to give him a shout out because every time he enters a meeting or helps us with something, it's like, oh, finally, a breath of fresh air, someone who knows what they're doing around here.
But I want you to understand how unusual this is. I've been working in small business for decades, and conventional wisdom is there's got to be one person in charge. There's got to be some man, some woman. Maybe there's two people, but usually there's got to be somebody that leads. How do decisions get made at Cards if there's no one leader?
Yeah, I mean, by vote, by discussion. There aren't votes. There aren't like decisions to be made that veer too terribly off of what we value as a company. Like, we really value our independence. We are always looking to make people laugh. We're trying to do funny things and get attention for them. And we try not to steer too far away from those values.
All right. So getting back to the Cards, because this is an inside view. We're here with Jen Bain, who is the number one employee from Cards Against Humanity. Can you think of any things that didn't make it onto the Cards that were just too absurd, too out of left field? Just, she said, God, I don't think it's going to work, or this might hurt our brand.
Well, we do a lot of, like I said, we do a lot of play testing, a lot of rewriting, a lot of editing. And I think people would be surprised by how much is left on the cutting room floor. I can talk about a card that some people love and some people absolutely hate. And it's not race. It's not like edgy or anything. The card is the best taquito in the galaxy.
The best what?
Taquito.
What? Oh, what's taquito?
Oh, you know, it's a food. It's a Mexican food. Like,
oh, I don't
food.
Even know that.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be a reason maybe why we wouldn't have this card in the game. But we do. You know, you were asking how decisions get made, and I said by vote. And this is definitely one where there was heated discussion over whether this card should be in the game. And when we decide what goes in the game, we always consider the card's perspective, what it could be played with, what's the point of view of this card. And that card in particular has almost no point of view. You didn't smile
right,
when I said it.
Right,
yeah, you had
right,
no reaction. Right, but right. Some people love this card.
So why was it controversial?
Because it wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny.
Yeah,
I see. It
yeah.
wasn't funny on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. If you can get a card. Oh, I just hit my microphone. If you can get a card that is funny on its own and funny when it plays with other ones, that is the magic. And it's very hard to get that to happen.
Well, that's why I like the ones with the midgets and the sitting on a hog squealing. Because I think on their own, they're pretty funny.
I mean, not to me anymore.
Exactly. Well, because you work there. Do you feel that the organization is still as irreverent as it's ever been? Because a lot of businesses, as they grow, as they make a profit, as they make money, as they find success, they start playing it safe.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, we've certainly done some things that make us less cool now. Like, we sell in Target. And I did a business panel one time where a man raised his hand and he goes, I just saw your game in Target. What happened? Like, what happened to you guys? I used to believe in you. And the truth is, like, we've been around for how many years now?
Right.
We've grown. We're in Target. And I just answered him. I just said, we're not cool anymore.
Right. But you still are taking the risks, it seems. Because a lot of organizations, after wooden, they would now hand it over to some big corporate game person. Right. Or sell it to a larger corporation. It seems like you're still trying to make a difference in the world by getting people to laugh and to consider issues that they should be aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's always going to be our goal. I don't think the Cards Against Humanity mission will ever veer too far from that. I mean, I hope not. We certainly have evolved over the years. Like, you know, the nature of the game. I don't think we've softened it at all. But we've definitely, you know, rewritten some cards, taken some cards out of the game. Like, just like comedy is always evolving, and we're not immune to that.
So two more questions for you, Jen. One is, what's really the future of Cards you see? Just more different kinds of packs with the same iconic format?
I actually have something exciting to share. We're working on our new game.
Wow.
Completely new game. And that's pretty much all I can say about it.
But it's going to make me laugh.
Yes.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure.
Yes, it will make you laugh.
And then the last question I want to ask you is, what is one of the favorite comments from a fan that you've had over the years where you say, God, that really makes this all worthwhile?
Oh, that's a great question. We get a lot of lovely fan mail. But the thing, a lot of people are like, thank you for your hard work. Like, really, really lovely comments that can really make your day. But the thing that makes that, like, delights me more than anything is when we do a stunt so weird, so shocking, or so just hard, like, so, like, confusing. Like, how did they pull that off? When people message us and go, are you guys okay? Everything okay at home?
I love that. Jen, thanks for joining us in the studio. If you have never played this game, you've got to play this, right? You will have more fun inside an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours than you've ever had in your life. And I also think that having a cocktail while you play this game really does help.
I agree.
Jen, thanks so much. This is AM 820 WCPT. We'll be right back. I know a lot of small business owners are confused about where to advertise online and how to actually get results. You gotta be diligent because you can lose a lot of money fast if you don't choose the right platform and the right audience. The question I always get is, should I advertise on a search engine like Google or a social media platform like LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter? For small business owners, LinkedIn is the place to drive brand awareness, generate leads, and build long-term, purposeful relationships that result in boosting their business. This is because effective search engine advertising should target audiences, not keywords. LinkedIn's network has more than 575 members, and their advertising gives you the ability to effectively target the right message to the right people while they're working. It has the marketing tools to help you target your customers with precision, down to their job title, company name, and industry. In fact, 4 out of 5 customers who are on LinkedIn are decision makers at their company, so you're building relationships with the people that really matter. This will result in higher quality leads and more website traffic. So to redeem a $100 free LinkedIn ad credit and launch your first campaign, please use this website for listeners of Small Business Radio Show. You got to go to linkedin.com/SBR. That's linkedin.com/SBR for your free $100 ad credit. Remember that terms and conditions apply. Let me know about your results.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva. Is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before with just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe more life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry, since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in, and existing customers are fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun, and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out BarryMoltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his 6-part video series. That's BarryMoltz, MOLTZ.com/unstuck.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, as small business owners, a lot of us struggle with addictions. This could be alcohol, drugs, food, gambling, working too much, sex. But how do you take ownership of these issues and actually move on? John Calliope is the author of the book called The Reward of Knowing. He's the owner and broker of Remax Results and its 38 offices across Minnesota and Wisconsin. With annual sales of more than $5.3 billion, Remax Results is now one of the largest Remax franchises in the world. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So why do people struggle with addictions?
Well, I think there's a variety of reasons. I think the first one starts with what I would refer to as introspection, or telling yourself the truth about what's going on. People battle with themselves internally, and they have a hard time coming to the conclusion that I need help or I need to change.
So what purpose do you think addictions serve in our life? Is it covering up for something else, some other hole that's there?
I think that when you cure the addiction, because addiction is a habit that results from typically a form of self-medication. And so when I talk about the changes in my life, I had all kinds of stuff wrong with me. I mean, I had all sorts of emotional depression, et cetera, but none of those issues were going to be resolved until I got off the drugs. And so you may have other issues you need to deal with, but without sobriety, you're not going to be able to confront those or get well.
So I really believe, John, that people don't change until they're in so much pain that staying where they are is not really an alternative. What was really your moment of truth? When did that happen for you?
I was involved in some alcohol-related driving activities, and I assaulted a police officer and was looking at going to prison for assaulting a police officer. That pretty much was the bottom of the barrel for my stupidity.
That was the moment of truth.
Yes, it was. And in AA, we would call that the moment of clarity. But I have met and worked with so many different people. And what the bottom is, or whatever term you want to describe it, it varies. I've had people I work with who are doing real well, and from the outside, everything looks great, but they've decided that their drinking is now posing a problem for their family or their career, and they just decide to quit. I was with another gentleman at the Salvation Army who had went through treatment more than 20 times, and he was homeless. And it just took him many, many repetitions of negativity before he goes, you know what, I finally quit. And what made the 20th time different than the first time? Can't answer that. It's an internal conflict, and it was finally his bottom.
Yeah, there's different bottoms for different people. So what was going on in the other parts of your life? Had you already built the successful RE/MAX business?
Oh, my goodness, no. I was, I had no job. I had no place to live. I had a car, but I didn't have a driver's license. I'd had repetitive alcohol-related activities. So there was no tiptoe of success. I was what you would just call a homeless bum. That's what I was doing when I was on drugs and alcohol. And so sobriety gave me my first peek at, there are other things going on out there.
So when you gained your sobriety, how did you take that next step to what became an incredibly successful business?
Well, that's an amazingly good question, and I don't think it's easy to answer. But once I was sober, I got a job. And once I got a job, I decided to buy a crummy house and fix it up. And after I fixed up a couple crummy houses, I decided maybe I'll get a real estate license and sell these crummy houses. and it just kept escalating till I became a successful salesperson, management, et cetera, and ultimately started the results companies.
Do you feel that one of the results of the sobriety was you felt like there was something that possibly could come next? You felt like, well, now maybe there is a future I can embrace.
And once again, that's very articulate, because when I was in the midst of chemical dependency, I wasn't ignorant enough to not see where this was going. And it was pretty clear to me that my life was going to be a homeless person. I planned on eventually getting back out to California because it seemed better to be homeless in Los Angeles than Minneapolis. But when you're on the bottom, there's, at least with me, I wasn't delusional about this was all going to work out somehow. I was ready to accept being a bum.
So as you were getting better, what was one of those turnaround points where you said to yourself, I really can do this? What was the big encouragement, the biggest stepping stone?
I would have to say one of them was just replacing some of my compulsive behavior with a compulsive behavior to work really hard. And so I might have been working too many hours the first few years in real estate, But compared to what I've been doing, I just liked it so much. I had a tremendous amount of energy. I'd never experienced success. I'd never experienced having money. And I liked the feeling of success, and I liked having the ability to buy material objects. I know that may sound a little simplistic, but I liked having a nice car. That was a good feeling to me because I earned it. And so I think just the stage of dedicating myself and working hard, I liked it.
We're talking with John Colopy. He's the author of the book called The Reward of Knowing. John, you talked about these compulsive behaviors, and I think that a lot of small business owners, we have these compulsive behaviors that lead to, you know, addictions or focusing a lot on one thing at a time. And it can be a really great thing in small business, but it could also be something that's dangerous.
Agree. And so as I suggested, initially, my desire to work harder than anybody else was really good. But when you're in relationships or have kids, you have to come up with some balance. And so some of that compulsive behavior, the very thing that made us want to have our own business and succeed, sometimes that can be conflict with your personal life. And you just have to constantly keep talking to yourself and being honest about how you're doing. Because a job is real important, but your personal satisfaction and your family is more important.
I find it really interesting, John, how you talk about the taste of success after a little bit of time. That was more of a powerful attraction than being addicted to drugs or alcohol.
Correct. I never experienced it. It became clear to me that your efforts are rewarded. Yes, we all know as small business people or business owners that a lot of times we get our butts kicked and it's not fun. But even when there's a negative occurrence, we're able to learn from it, and next time we're going to do better. And it's all the process of creating something that's your own, and there's a lot of satisfaction in that. You just have to make sure that you're talking to yourself about how you're feeling. Is this working? I've noticed a lot of people that are business people think that it's okay to be aggressive in socializing, and that can lead to too much stimuli from drinking and hanging out, and then it's not okay. Then people don't think the same about you.
So, John, what would your advice be to small business owners right now, perhaps going through a particular hard part of their life or business? They've experienced a lot of failure, so they're leaning on, you know, drugs or alcohol or food or gambling or sex or whatever it is. What would your advice to them be to make sure they don't slide too far into that place?
Well, once again, it comes with being honest. Am I doing the right thing to achieve what I desire? So many people articulate, now I have a giant sales staff, 1,200 salespeople in our company. And so salespeople will articulate, oh, I want to sell more houses. Oh, I want to be in this club, I want to reach this level. And they articulate a desire to perform. But then when you break it down to how many phone calls did you make last week? Well, that's not enough to be successful. So why do they articulate success, but yet when they have a chance to implement the steps on a day-by-day basis, they don't? And I think that's what happens to a lot of people in business, is they think they want the end result, because it sounds cool, but when it comes to doing the activities necessary to achieve it, they're really not motivated and their desire isn't strong enough.
Well, I really think that a lot of people see what they want out there, the shiny object, but they're not really willing to work, put the hard work into it, John, that it takes actually to get there. And if you have an addiction and you're trying to come out of that addiction, it takes a lot of hard work. It's not easy stuff.
It takes, first of all, the commitment to yourself, knowing that this behavior has to change. One of the things when I do coaching or business planning, the word that comes up frequently is the word consistency. And so if you're working a program to stop addiction, you have to be consistent in its implementation, follow up, whether you're an AA, whether you're seeing a therapist, whatever your system is, you have to have one. And the same thing applies to the work you need to do in your business. You can't go crazy and have 2 good weeks where you're just killing it and then slide back for a month. You have to be consistent and do the job every day, both in preparing yourself for a better business career or being consistent so that you can beat your addiction.
So why do you think that consistency is so hard, whether you're trying to beat an addiction or be successful in small business?
You know, the only introspection I could have on that is that it's learned behavior. And I'm not saying that with any certainty. It just seems to me that I didn't have that role model. I didn't behave that way when I was a kid. I didn't aspire to anything specifically. I didn't excel at sports. I didn't know how to lock myself into something and pay the price for a desire. So in my case, I can only go with learned behavior. I never learned how to focus and be clear about where I was going.
So I think that a lot of us have addictive personalities, and it's the kind of thing that doesn't really go away. I mean, for myself, once you've had that addiction, it's always there kind of in the background, don't you think?
I work on chemical dependency all the time. I'll be an addict as long as I'm alive, and I can't lose sight of it. I was in AA for decades. I use a therapist now, and I meet with my shrink regularly because I'm crazy and I need to keep working on myself. My goal in life is to improve my overall happiness and satisfaction, and that's a work in progress. It's not done and won't ever be done. Learning is something that is with us until we end.
It's such an interesting thing, because if you're on the outside of John Colopy's life looking and you're going, wow, here's a really successful business person, I can't imagine any problems he might have.
I've had anxiety. I take antidepressants. I've had anger management issues. I got all kinds of stuff, just like everybody walking the streets does. The one thing that's fortunate is I've developed a way to tell myself the truth and then get help to deal with it.
I think that's an important thing. Whatever you might think of someone else, well, they have the charm life, or they're an incredibly small business owner, everybody's got issues that they deal with, and they've got to figure how to transition through them.
And while I agree that I certainly have had my share of issues, and based upon my businesses, this has been a week of constantly new weird things happening, I am happier today than I was a week ago. And that's what's important to me, that my personal satisfaction with my family continues to increase, and my overall feelings that I'm contributing to the world in a manner, not just by having a lot of people that work for me or creating revenue, but giving back to the community. We have a big organization called the Results Foundation, and that's a passion of all of the people in my companies to support that and help other people. And that, I get off on that. I never thought I would, but it's cool.
Do you sit around some days and think, God, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I actually survived what I had been through before?
No, I don't look back very much.
And that's a good thing, that there's one of the talents right there. The last question I had for you, John, is what do you do when you find, and I think a lot of folks that are addicts, we find ourselves, you know, sliding back. What do you do to make sure that you don't slide too far?
Well, once again, it's the consistency of your program. And so I appear to be doing just fine today, but by the time I see my therapist next week, there'll be some issue related to temperament, environment, something I need to talk about to get myself back on an even track, and so that it doesn't build up in me and it doesn't once again surface as a need to escape or self-medicate. So I just keep working on the things as often as I can so that I don't get ambushed by my own emotions, and so that I can be honest with myself and confront issues before they contribute to, as you described, sliding back into the drug and alcohol usage.
Well, John, I appreciate being on the show, and I really admire your journey. Where can people get a copy of the book, The Reward of Knowing and Learning More About You?
Amazon.com is where you can find the book. John Colopy is on a variety of websites. So Google John Colopy and you'll get all kinds of weird stuff from the different sites and things I do and speeches and whatever you need to do. And you can feel free to email, and I'm happy to talk with anybody that has a question or observation.
John, thanks for being on the show. Coming up next, we're going to talk with one of the pioneers back in the 1990s of email marketing. This is AM 820 WCPT. We'll be right back. Whenever I talk to a small business owner, I insist on one function they should always outsource, and that's payroll. You see, payroll is complicated, and both the employee and the government insist that you get it right. You see, when you do payroll, not only do you have to deduct money from the employee's paychecks to remit to the government, but as an employer, you need to add to it. Plus, you need to send this money to various government agencies on a regular basis, and if you don't do it, they will hold you personally liable for it. So this is one thing you gotta stop worrying about. That's why I recommend the new Square Payroll app. With this app, you can do everything from setting up an account to paying your team. It's fully integrated with Square payments and time cards for W-2 employees and contractors. Square takes care of your tax withholdings, payments, and filings at no extra cost. There is flexible and transparent pricing that scales with your business. So go ahead, search Square Payroll in the Apple iTunes or Google Play app stores to download this app or visit www.square.com/go/SBR to learn more.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, one of my favorite movies of all time is a movie called Rudy. If you've never seen it, it's about a small kid from Joliet, Illinois, who's determined to play football for Notre Dame despite having neither the strong academic nor star athletic background. Against all odds, as a walk-on and part of the practice squad, Rudy got in a game at the University of Notre Dame. As fans repeated that famous chant, Rudy, Rudy, he sacked the quarterback in the last 27 seconds of the only game of his college football career. He started his life as a son of an oil refinery worker and the third of 14 children. Today, he's one of the most popular motivational speakers in the United States. He now has a new documentary out on Amazon Prime. It's called Rudy Rudiger, The Walk-On. Rudy, thanks so much for being on the show.
Okay, thanks for that info.
So you said that in one of your interviews, you said that everyone gets locked into a culture and it's hard to break out of, that you never were destined to play college or play college football. What made you think you could actually do it?
So it's not that I could do it, it's how you contribute to it. There's a big difference.
So tell us about that, because you also say that you graduated in the bottom three of your class before you went to the Navy. But when you went to the Navy, your confidence came back. What in the Navy gave you that confidence?
Well, a couple things called collaboration, how to collaborate with people, get the right information. So they're getting information from people who really are not interested in your achieving. So that was a big difference.
So when I watched the documentary, which I really recommend, it's called Rudy Rudiger, The Walk-On on Amazon Prime. It says you were rejected, unlike in the movie, from Notre Dame 500 times. You never let people tell you no. Where'd you learn that? Because so many of us, Rudy, when people tell us no, we just go on to something else.
Well, the difference is, the big difference is, how bad do you want it? How bad are you willing to have patience for it? And what you need to do in order to do the right thing, that's the big difference.
And so where did you develop the patience, I guess, in an early time in your life?
It goes with the feeling. It goes with what you really wanted. It goes with, I'm going to do this. It's a progress. It's a progression, a realization of a dream is what it is. You go through this progression, and you learn that you can do each step, and get the confidence, and that's what gives you the confidence when you go through these steps. Being positive about it.
One of the things you say, and I just love this, you say, you have to pester life till it gives in. Why do you persist when so many people in this world just quit?
Well, you pester life, you find the right person. So, because there's somebody out there that's out there that you know, want to do what you want to do. You're going to have to find them, and that's the will. If you have the will to find that person.
Yeah, I mean, your story is truly amazing to me. I just wonder why so many people, they don't go after the dreams, and in the end, they live with regret.
Well, most people do. And, you know, that's because they around the wrong information. They're not around their mentors. They're not around their belief system. And they get some thinking as to why they can't do it, and they start surrendering to that. Unless you get around the right information, right people, and you pursue and you endure and you persevere through the tough times, because tough times are only temporary. It's how your mental attitude is to adjust to it and move forward.
One of the things that I learned watching your new documentary, it's on Amazon Prime, it's called Rudy Rudiger, The Walk-On, was that you really knew how to build relationships in order to get into Notre Dame and get the movie Rudy made. What is really, have you found the important element in trying to build a relationship that eventually will be successful in the long run?
Well, relationships are the key. If you don't build a relationship, you won't know how to help you or what you really want.
So who really taught you that at an early age? Because I think most college students don't know how to build that relationship.
Well, it's the Navy. Again, the military has a tremendous way of doing that for you.
That's really good to hear.
It's training, it's repetition, it's teamwork, it's all that.
You know, another thing that I noticed in the documentary, you introduce in that film your friend D-Bob, and he says, and I quote at the very end, he says, we don't all get to be great, but we know we're going to get better. What did that mean to you when he said that? What is your interpretation of that?
You do better than what you're doing. That's all it means. Just be better. You don't have to be great. Just be better for what you're doing.
Now, a lot of people don't know, Rudy, that you were actually on the cover of Sports Illustrated, right?
Yeah, well, that was my mistake. Under the legs of Bill Walton going up for the rebound, I was in charge of the floor, cleaning the floor, and I was like, oh.
I just love that. Well, last week, I posted on social media, I said I was going to interview you, and I have a couple of questions from our Facebook followers. Dawn wanted to know, what are the most encouraging words you tell yourself when you have just one setback after another? What words can we use to help us keep going when we want to quit?
Well, the words I use, I have to do this, I can't do this, I'll find a way to do it, do something to do it, so...
And Tara McCarthy asks, what do you think, how has college sports changed since you were there in college so many years ago? Is there anything missing, any lessons that are now missing for today's college athletes?
Well, it is different, faster, bigger, better nutrition, more money, more pressure, more understanding that college is a money game, it's an entertainment game now, so it's all different today.
So the last question I want to ask you, Rudy, is one from my son. He says, you know, the movie Rudy is 25 years old. If they would remake it and have someone else play you besides Sean Astin, who should it be?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
It should be George Clooney. What do you think?
No.
Or Hugh Jackman?
Yeah. No, Sean was a perfect fit.
He was.
He was the character, the emotion we were looking for in the feeling. So
he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Rudy, thank you so much for being
thank
on.
You.
If you want to watch his new Amazon Prime documentary, it's called Rudy Rudiger, The Walk-On. I want to thank everyone for joining this week's radio show. I want to thank our sponsors, Nextiva, the all-in-one communications platform. I also want to thank Square Payroll, the easy way to pay your team. Go to www.square.com/go/SBR. It's also provided by LinkedIn, the place to advertise to generate leads and build relationships to your audience. If you want a free $100 credit, go to www.linkedin.com/SBR. And of course, I've got to thank our staff, our booking producer, Sarah Schaffrin, our in-studio producer, Lady B, our marketing manager, Courtney Gilchrist. If you are serious about being more successful in 2019, you got to give me a call. I set up a private line for that. It's 773-837-8250. Or you can email me at barry@moltz.com. Isn't this the year that you get your small business unstuck? Isn't this the year that you finally, after all this time, make the money you deserve? Remember, love everyone, trust a few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry Moltz on the web at barrymoltz.com or more episodes of Small Business Radio at smallbizradioshow.com.